You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Ransomware operators begin timing their releases for more reputational damage. Another gang is equipping its ransomware with scripts to disable defenses, and yet another is now into stock shorting. The U.S. Postal Inspection Service is apparently monitoring social media. GCHQ's head warns of the dangers of becoming dependent on China's technology. Johannes Ulrich from SANS on commodity malware targeting enterprises. Our guest is Itai Maor from Cato with some of the clever ways criminals avoid detection. And it's not just sharks interested in undersea cables. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, April 23rd, 2021. Ransomware continues to trouble organizations. One of the bigger recent incidents was R-Evil's attack on Taiwan's Quanta, a major supplier for Apple, an attack that came to general attention this week. ThreatPost reports that after Quanta refused to pay, the R-Evil gang began to leak sensitive design documents online, and they timed their leaks to coincide with Apple's big spring-loaded product announcement event. R-Evil wants $50 million by May 1st. In other ransomware news, researchers at GuidePoint Security say that the gang behind MountLocker is changing the way it does business. MountLocker, whose ransomware as a service business entered the criminal marketplace in the second half of last year, has been an unfortunately effective but fairly conventional criminal operation. It encrypted and exfiltrated files on the double extortion that threatens both data availability and data privacy that's now customary with ransomware operators. Now, however, GuidePoint says MountLocker is stepping up their game by including scripting and capabilities directly targeting prevention measures. Along with other enhancements, the extortionists are now deploying scripts tailored to the specific defensive tools they find in their target's environment. And another ransomware group has expanded its threats to a promise that they'll work with crooked market speculators to short the stock of the companies they target. recorded Future finds that the hoods behind the DarkSide ransomware have now made it formal. Dmitry Smilianets, threat intel analyst at Recorded Future, told The Record, quote, "While other ransomware families previously discussed how to leverage the effect of a publicly disclosed cyber attack on the stock market, they have never made it their official attack vector," end quote. The U.S. Postal Service is running an Internet covert operations program, Yahoo News reports, apparently a broad monitoring of U.S. citizens' social media activity in an effort to trawl for signs of extremist content that might suggest incipient violations of law. The news has been poorly received by privacy advocates and some members of Congress. The U.S. Postal Inspection Service is an actual law enforcement agency with a serious and long-standing mission to protect Postal Service operations that goes back to the surveyors Benjamin Franklin appointed for that purpose in the late 18th century. In fact, since William Goddard was appointed the first surveyor on August 7, 1775, the service arguably predates the Republic itself. The Postal Inspection Service describes its mission as to support and protect the U.S. Postal Service and its employees, infrastructure, and customers, enforce the laws that defend the nation's mail system from illegal or dangerous use, and ensure public trust in the mail. It currently organizes that mission under several relatively expansive heads: protecting USPS, protecting USPS employees, illegal narcotics, mail and package theft, identity theft, mail fraud, fraud prevention and education, suspicious mail, disaster response, money laundering, cybercrime, global mail security, and child exploitation. Presumably, incitement or conspiracy carried out over social media would fall under cybercrime, but the whole business strikes many as questionable domestic surveillance. The Postal Inspection Service didn't reply directly to Yahoo News in response to their questions, but they did return a general statement about their activities. They cast the Internet Covert Operations Program as a routine protective measure to secure the mail. Here's how they put it, quote, "The Internet Covert Operations Program is a function within the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, which assesses threats to Postal Service employees and its infrastructure by monitoring publicly available open-source information. Additionally, the Inspection Service collaborates with federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies to proactively identify and assess potential threats to the Postal Service, its employees and customers, and its overall mail processing and transportation network. In order to preserve operational effectiveness, the U.S. Postal Inspection Service does not discuss its protocols, investigative methods, or tools," end quote. So, tell it to the people squabbling with their city's water department over late charges because their bill was delayed by, in some cases, a month or more. The Guardian notes that the surveillance effort comes at a time when the U.S. Postal Service's core responsibility of delivering mail has been perceived as falling off from previous standards. Sniffing out revolutionary or reactionary wrongthink is now in the Postal Service's remit. NSA didn't want the mission, so it went to the Postmaster General. Representative Thomas Massie, for example, a Republican representing Kentucky's 4th District, put it this way, quote, "Disturbing. Why do presidents and my colleagues in Congress tolerate these violations of the Constitution? Also, and unfortunately, the USPS has been losing money for many years, so where do they find the money to run this surveillance program?" End quote. Representative Massie tweeted these remarks, so one presumes the Postal Service received them. Had he dropped them in the mail? Who knows? It's a good thing dogs don't actually get mail, or they'd have an even bigger justification in the ancestral canine war with letter carriers than pooches already do. The head of Britain's GCHQ says that the West faces a moment of reckoning in cyberspace, and that unless it wants the world's operating system to be made in China, it had better get skeptical about relying on Chinese technology in its infrastructure. GCHQ director Jeremy Fleming told the BBC, quote, "The risk as I see it today is that we lose control of the standards that shape our technology environment," end quote. The pressure to allow Chinese tech in will grow as cities become inevitably smarter, smarter in the IoT sense of the word. Fleming sees the experience of rolling out 5G technology as an important cautionary tale. And finally, Have you thought about the possibility of undersea cables being hacked? Whitehall has. Technorati says the UK is procuring a surveillance ship to quietly inspect cables for physical interference. It's a real possibility. The Royal Navy did it to German diplomatic communications during World War I, so Whitehall should know. And the Royal Navy's not the only one, either. Or so we hear. Skittishness about cables has been a point of contention in the southwestern Pacific in particular, where Australia has objected to Chinese tech companies' participation in running cable service to neighbors like Papua. Of course, there's physical interference, and then there's physical interference. There are plenty of documented cases of sharks gnawing on undersea cables, presumably attracted by the EMI energy they may be putting out. Real sharks, not, you know, robot sharks with lasers.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Adversaries have perfected their game when it comes to evading endpoint security, sandboxes, threat intel feeds, and more. And the ongoing shift to the cloud has opened up new opportunities for them and challenges for defenders. Itai Moore is Senior Director of Security and Strategy at Cato Networks, and he joins us with thoughts on network-based threat hunting and leveraging your tools to work together.
I think we're actually in a very interesting time right now because different threats have been evading security controls for a while now, but almost everything we had was on-prem, and we used endpoint types of detections. And now a lot of the companies, a lot of organizations are moving to the cloud, which is a great opportunity for security, but as we've learned in the past, it's also a great opportunity for attackers as well. So I think one of the challenges though, that where we find ourselves now is we're trying to use old school or the techniques that we used in the past for on-prem infrastructure to detect and mitigate cloud-based threats. And it's not what it was designed for. I mean, the attackers have already know how to beat the old versions on on-prem, and of course for cloud infrastructure, it's a different game.
Well, I mean, let's continue along with that metaphor then. I mean, when folks are working in a cloud environment, what sort of things do you recommend they have in place?
So there's several security solutions and architectures that I would recommend. But before I even go into that, I think a lot of organizations can better utilize what they already have today in-house, which means taking a look at some of the security feeds that they have, intelligence feeds, and correlating them, for example, is one good practice. I worked for a threat intelligence company in the past as well, and I think some of these feeds, some of the info that's there is amazing, but it's really siloed, and the attackers take advantage of siloed information. For us as defenders, we have the opportunity to actually take all the information that's coming from multiple sources, multiple vendors, whatever it is, and correlate them to really identify threats and sometimes even identify threats that have not been identified before. And here's where I'm getting to the old school approach versus the new school approach. Old school approach was, hey, let's sign everything and, you know, fight it. And as soon as I see that signature on my network, I can identify it. But, you know, there's so many threats out there today. And I'm just taking one small example, right? But there's so many threats out there today that signing everything is not easy, not to mention the fact that sometimes you may want to identify the threat even if it's not signed. And that's where I'm getting into network-based threat hunting, which is, you know, one of the things that is allowed if you use a SASE architecture where you have the security and the network controls combined and integrate, merged. And you can start looking at things and say, hey, so I have an alert here. Let's combine that with information I know from all the network that I'm seeing, all the different network flows. Is this little communication, is it going to somewhere that I've seen before? Does it act in a certain way? Did it use certain processes? There's all kinds of elements you can collect from different systems. And when you put all of them together, you can say, you know what? I don't know what it is, but it's not something good. Now, each one of them alone may not raise an alert. And we actually tried this with our own security team. We saw threats that went undetected when you looked at them in a siloed view of one of a specific, for example, threat intelligence or certain types of controls that you have. But when you combined three or four of these elements together, you could say, I don't know what it is, but I know it's not acting like I would expect something good to act. Does that make sense?
It does. Now, the actual combining of the data there, integrating that information, how should folks go about doing that?
So you can use all kinds of models. There are actually some good articles out there. We have our own MDR team, and they take this information and combine different security feeds, combine popularity, for example. Like I said before, one of the examples is if I have access to data for hundreds of customers, and now I see that one of my customers is trying to communicate over the network to a certain domain or URL. Has any one of the other customers ever tried to connect to it? That's a popularity rating, right? And you can say, well, no, it's the first time. So, you know, maybe it's something that a domain that was just created and, you know, it's not something, it's not Google, it's not Yahoo, it's not CNN. And so it's suspicious. Other things that we look into, for example, are the domains themselves. You start looking, if you try to sign a malware, the malware may communicate to different domains. So the signature changes, or the network signature of it changes. But if you look at the domains themselves, all of a sudden you start seeing these different patterns. Oh, wait a minute, this domain, it's in always 24 characters, and it's always vowel number. Okay, I'm seeing a pattern here. So now I'm going to search for this pattern in all the communications. And by the way, not just for this customer, for all my customers. And now I'm a security vendor, but I'm actually using the knowledge, the combined knowledge coming both from security and network of my customers to actually get a very good understanding of what is the threat landscape. And, you know, where it's funny, it's where is the needle in the needle stack? Because there's a lot of needles. There's a lot of bad stuff going on, but you really want to detect the ones that, you know, might put you in the news in a couple of days. So that's the type of work that we're doing.
That's Atai Moore from Cato Networks.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Johannes Ulrich. He is the Dean of Research at the SANS Technology Institute, also the host of the ISC Stormcast podcast. Johannes, it's great to have you back. I know you and your team have been tracking some commodity malware that's been targeting enterprises lately. What are you all looking at?
Yeah, so if you are in this business, one of the sad parts about it is that day after day, you see these reports, you get the sample, where an email arrives with your Office attachment and a macro. And of course, for the most part, enterprise tools are having a pretty good handle on them and are removing those malicious attachments. But ever so often, something slips through. Now, often these exploits are really more targeted at your home small business user that doesn't have a lot of protection in terms of anti-malware. And in that case, typically that malware, what it did is it sort of focused on the machine that it was running on. It may encrypt it for ransomware, it may steal credentials, banking trojans and whatnot we had. Maybe it went out after a couple shares, network shares that were mounted on that machine, but that even was sometimes more accidentally. Now, what we saw recently is that actually what these attackers realized is, hey, you know, there are a lot of enterprises with good protection that will not allow our macros in, but ever so often something slips through. You know how it goes, that CIO or CEO who has an intern to print out his email for him. Well, in that case, you know, the intern, of course, gets blamed for starting the macro, but it's now being started on the corporate system. So what this particular malware does is it checks, am I running on an enterprise network? And the way it figures that out is it checks if it is part of an Active Directory domain, so a more managed network. And if so, then it installs additional remote access tools, in particular, Cobalt Strike. That sort of seems to be the tool of choice here, or some variants or similar open source products are then being used to sort of gain persistent access to the system.
What are your tips here then to prevent this sort of thing?
Well, to prevent it, first of all, if you are analyzing malware, make sure that you also analyze it on a sandbox that is joined to an Active Directory domain, so you see the full behavior of it. Of course, you know, your standard anti-malware tools should take care of it. They should find the macro. They should block it. They're really sort of, you know, looking for the one system that slipped your central control. That's what they're looking for. And what happens next then really is this command control channel. So this is one of those things where you really shouldn't just focus on prevention by blocking these attachments, but you know, assume that one or two of them are slipping through. So make sure you're also having detection in place to identify compromised systems.
It really is remarkable how much of this is a numbers game, that, you know, these folks are, you know, they try to hit everybody with everything and sort of see what sticks.
Yes, in part here, the problem is also that, you know, the way sort of the bad guys are organized. These people that are sending you the malware, you're probably already dealing with two organizations. There's the one organization that really just provides the spam service, the sending the emails. And then there's the other organization that is writing the malware. But then they're essentially providing services for other tiers of malicious organizations. And you know, they figured out that, hey, for a home system, we'll encrypt the baby pictures and they'll pay us $100. For the enterprise system, we'll hand it off to someone. We sell access to that company. And they can probably make more money that way and spend the time to really sniff around the network and see what hurts the most.
Yeah, I mean, they're run like real businesses.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, well, Johannes Ulrich, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Be sure to check out this week's Research Saturday and my conversation with Jason Passwaters from Intel 471 on bulletproof hosting, what it is and how to minimize impact, common BPH malware families, and top BPH providers. That's Research Saturday. Check it out. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Ivan, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.